guys. I'm fantasy author J.H. Fleming.
And I'm spooky writer Philip Dreher Duncan, because this is a spooky episode. We're doing a Halloween episode. Because, well, I just realized that we'll be gone for Halloween. And we'll be at the World Fantasy Convention. So I have no idea what next week's episode looks like, but this is going to be our Halloween episode. It's super spooky. It's so spooky, we turned Chris into a ghost. That's why you can't hear him. I should probably stop clicking my pen while we're recording.
Probably.
If you hear weird clicks, it's not my pen. It's not me being a bad podcaster. It's something directly behind you. Oh, spooky.
Ooh.
All right, let's fire this off correctly. J.H.
Gee.
Halloween is your favorite holiday.
It is.
Why do you love Halloween so much?
I think it's sort of a tie to the season. Obviously, autumn is my favorite of all the seasons. I don't like being hot, so summer is right out. And then spring just slowly gets warmer and warmer, and it reminds me summer's coming, so that one's out. Autumn I like, and I don't mind winter. I'd rather be cold than hot. So autumn's the winner for that. Obviously, Halloween falls into that season, but it's a little more than that. So like the one thing is obviously the weather, and I love it when it's like gray and cloudy. Could be rainy, could not be rainy, either way. I love all of that. But I also just love, so you have the dress up, and it's kind of related to like the folklore where it's the idea the spirits come back on this one night, and if you had this costume, you look like them, so you don't look human, thus you're not getting attacked. Anyway, so I love all of that. I guess it's because it has that kind of like the folklore and magical connection almost, because it can be like there's the same sort of idea with, say, like fairies, where like you can be spirited away to the fae, and like that part kind of about, you know, the spirits, you know, taking you or attacking you, it had the same sort of feel to it in my head. So like they're directly related for me almost. So I love, it's not necessarily the spookiness so much. I don't care about the candy. It's more just like loving the season itself, the connection to like the folklore and myths, and I guess a little bit of spookiness. Like I really like creepy, like ghost type stories or characters who kind of like walk that line of like not quite villains, but they're definitely doing some shady stuff. I don't know if any of that made sense, but my brain loves it and I can't get enough of it. So that's why this time of year is my favorite.
Well, I'm fat and I like candy.
I do like candy.
I especially like candy that people give to me for free.
Yeah, specifically chocolate.
I miss trick-or-treating.
Yeah, that part was always fun as a kid.
I don't think, do kids still trick-or-treat? Is that still a thing?
I don't know. I know, so like we're in the South, and a lot of like the churches will do things where they have like trunk-or-treat or some sort of fall festival type thing. So I think you still have those like kind of group gathering things going on, whether it's connected to a church or just a community event. I don't know so much about trick-or-treating. It's tough because where we live, we're kind of out in the middle of nowhere, not close to anything. So like it'd be weird for us to get trick-or-treaters. So I don't really know.
If a kid knocks on our door in a Halloween costume, you hit him. That's not a child. There's no way.
It's a little demon.
It's not. It's a little demon monster. No kid's parents in their right mind are going to pull down our sketchy driveway and be like, this seems like a reasonable house to go. One house in the middle of a giant field seems reasonable to go. That's not going to happen. If there's any child who ever knocks on our door that you don't recognize or is in costume, you hit them. You kick them right off you punt them right off the porch, and you slam the door and lock it. Because that is not a human child. Unless it got lost, in which case I don't want to be involved with that. That sounds like paperwork.
Yup. I was going to say that did remind me of some years ago when we lived in an apartment in Bentonville. And that year we did get trick-or-treaters. It was great because we had Halloween movies on. I was dressed up and we just left the light on so that, and I think the door was open, but like the screen door was closed. So like you could see that we were available for trick-or-treaters. And we would have people periodically and you just let the movies roll. And this dad and his like little boy showed up and the dad was like getting the candy for the boy. And the boy was distracted by the movie we had on. It was either like Hocus Pocus or Nightmare Before Christmas, one of those. And he started like walking into our house to go watch this movie. And the dad like grabbed him like, "What are you doing?" It's great.
Yeah, it's pretty good. That was fun. I think we need to figure out how to get an adult trick-or-treat going. I mean, there could be candy, but you know, it'd be great if like we could dress up and go door to door and people give us like those little booze shots and things, you know, like here's a little jar.
I was going to say that reminded me of this. I need to send you this meme. It's older, but it would also be fun. It's this meme of, so like the story is like this woman lives in this college town. And she said one year for Halloween, like they, you know, they were one of the houses giving out candy and they had someone knock on the door and they opened it and there's another door. And so they knock on it.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
I think it had a sign said something like, "Please knock." Yeah. And so like then like the door opens, so to speak. And it's these college guys dressed as these old ladies. And then they started like oohing and aahing over the like the people's costumes and gave them candy. Yeah. And then they picked up their door and walked to the next house.
That's amazing. I love that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have like like when you were trick-or-treating as a kid, was there ever like that one magical house you stopped at that had like the full-size candy bars?
We didn't have that. My favorite house was actually just like a block or two down from us. And that was because one of our high school teachers lived there. She's one of everyone's like favorite teachers anyway. But she had like this big two-story house and she would go all out on decorations every year. And it was on my street. So every Halloween, nice. Like when she got the decorations up, I got to drive right by that every day. So that was always fun. I always liked when she got her stuff up.
Yeah, I remember like we would freak out when you would come up on a house, knock on the door, and they'd hold out their thing of candy and it'd have full size candy bars. Be like, "Mom, let's circle back around and hit them again."
Yeah, we didn't have that. We also didn't have like the normal trick or treating. I'm saying this and like remembering because I remember like, so I remember going to church events sometimes, like sometimes our own and sometimes like other churches in our town. So we have multiple churches in my hometown. So we'd go to those and I remember going to like specific houses. So like if it was someone my mom like knew, either like a relative or she used to do home health care. So if it was like one of her patients. But I also remember her driving us like all the way to Fort Smith at least one year and going to different houses there because it was like to some of her patients and whatnot, like to their houses. So we didn't have like a regular routine.
I remember my mom, like, because we were poor and so like we wouldn't really like buy costumes, right? But my mom would always make me like the most baller costume. So like one year when I was a little kid, she made me a Ghostbusters costume, right? So she made me the whole jumpsuit, like put my little name on my chest and like my little patch, you know? And then she made my, what do you call them? I'm going to lose my geek card because I can't. Proton packs. She made me their proton packs. They were on their back. She made it out of like some kind of, I don't even know, like styrofoam or something, and then she wrapped like blue material around it and like made all the buttons and stuff, and then she even made like the little like gun piece with like a cord that extended so I'd have the gun piece, and then there's like Velcro down the side so I could like attach it to my backpack or whatever. It was pretty cool.
That is
pretty wicked awesome. Yeah. What was your favorite
costume?
Yeah, when you were a kid, what was your favorite one?
Oh geez.
Which
I'd never, surprisingly, I don't think I ever dressed up as a witch as a kid. I don't think I did that till I was older. I would have loved it, but I do remember one year my mom tried to dress me up as like a beauty queen, but then she wanted to do like a fake mole on my face, and I didn't want that. I was like really little. I was like, no, I don't want it. Like, I started, you know, crying. I didn't want it. I refused. And so we had to do a completely different costume last minute.
That sounds like you.
Yeah.
I had another one my mom did for me. I wanted to be the Grim Reaper, mostly because I think I saw the scythe toy that they always have out for Halloween, and I wanted one. Mm. And so I was like, I want to be a Grim Reaper. But again, we were poor, so the only part she would buy was my face paint, to paint my face white. And then she made me the whole, like, black robes and stuff. And nice. Then she took, like, some kind of big, I don't know, stick or something, and she made my scythe for me, like, with aluminum foil. And so I had this really cool scythe that I imagine I broke it at some point, but it was way better than the plastic one, and it lasted all evening.
Yeah.
All right. What else? Let's do, what's your favorite? You can only choose one. What's your favorite Halloween movie?
Oh, no. You can only choose one. I don't want to choose just one. Choose one. I'm not doing that. I'm choosing all right. multiple.
List them off. I've had to watch them 18 times since we've been together.
Yes. Every Halloween. I love, love, love Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow. The one with Johnny Depp and Christina Ricci.
Ray love Parks. So shout much. Out Darth Maul.
yes, that one. I also, obviously, Nightmare Before Christmas. Some may consider that a Christmas movie. I double dip and say it's both. It's Halloween and it's Christmas. Best of both worlds. It's Cartoon Network show, Over the Garden Wall, not a movie, but basically when you add it all together, it's basically the length of a movie, and it's wonderful and
I amazing. Wanted to talk about that one, and you ruined it.
I'm just mentioning it. We can still talk about it when you bring it up.
Oh.
What else? There's some others. I used to watch more when I was a kid. I still like them okay, but they're not like my favorites, like Casper, Tower of Terror, I feel like there's more to this list, and I can't remember what they are now.
I can remember this. I think I've told you this before, but I haven't told the podcast listeners. One Halloween when I was a kid, I got up in the morning, and there was some, like, cartoon on, and it was, like, some kind of somewhat fantasy cartoon. It was, like, something I'd never seen before or heard of or anything, and it had something to do with Halloween. So they did, like, a marathon of it. And I sat there and watched it like all day, and I was enthralled with it. Right. And like right when it was getting really good, my mom was like, are we doing this trick or treating thing or what? And I was kind of like, I almost don't want to, cause I want to see how this ends. And I was like, I'll hunt this down later somehow.
Yeah.
I can't miss out on trick or treating. And I never did figure out what it was or what it was called. I would have no way to look it up now. And I never got to see how it ended. And I was very sad.
Oh, no. Do you remember anything about it?
No, not a thing. Well, I remember the people hidden a haystack at one point. That's literally it. I think that's the only thing I remember. And that's probably not even true. That's probably a bad memory.
Was it a cartoon or like a live action type thing?
No, it was a cartoon.
Hmm.
Some kind of weird cartoon I'd never seen or heard before, but I thought it was amazing.
You said fantasy?
I think so.
I'm curious now.
But even that I'm not sure on. I just remember it had something to do with Halloween, and they played it all day, and I watched all of it, and it was getting really good. I mean, the whole thing was really good, and then it was like, I gotta see how this plays out, and then I never did.
Oh, I want to know what it is now.
I don't know. Let's talk about Over the Garden Wall.
Yes.
So
I'll let you go first and I'll add
on. All right. So when JH and I got together, I was working a job where I didn't really do holidays because I had to work all of them. Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Thanksgiving, Halloween, usually, 4th of July, usually, like Easter, every holiday basically I had to work. So I just like didn't really do holidays. And so when we got together, she was like, that's nonsense. And shortly thereafter, I got a different job where I could have something of a life again. And so she was like, we're going to do a whole Halloween thing, right? We're going to watch movies all day and we're going to give candy to peasants and all that stuff, right? So I was on board for Sleepy Hollow because I remembered that movie and I liked it. And I was on board for The Nightmare Before Christmas. And then she wanted me to watch this stupid cartoon. And I was like, it's got like several episodes. I don't want to watch it. And she was like, let's just watch a few. I'm like, all right, fine. And so she puts on this Cartoon Network children's cartoon. And it's amazing. It is amazing. I love Over the Garden Wall. The little dude is my, I can't think of his name.
Greg
is my spirit animal. That's who I want to be when I grow up. I want to be that child from that show. It's amazing. And it is like mm-hmm. you can just watch it all in one sitting. It's like a couple hours yep. long or whatever.
No, there are 10 main episodes with one pilot episode. And they're all about like 10, 15 minutes long. So it's just under like 2 hours, probably like hour, 110 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
You can watch it all in one sitting. It's worth it.
Yes, definitely. So I actually was introduced to it by my cousin Elizabeth, who just kind of showed up one day and was like, we're going to watch this. I'm like, okay, whatever. And I immediately fell in love with it, and it's been a thing ever since.
Yeah, we watch it almost every year, and real life yep. Axel also fell in love with it, and he watches it with his kids almost every year. It's like a tradition for them mm-hmm. now too. So that's cool. All right, let's move off of movies. Wait, let's not. Like yep. shout out Ghostbusters. Obviously, I had yeah. the costume when I was a kid.
Also Hocus Pocus, which I barely got to mention earlier because I couldn't think of it at the time. That one was a funny one for me because that was one as a kid. I would see it on like the Disney Channel, but almost always it had already started. And so like I never saw the beginning until like I was an adult and bought the movie myself and got to watch it start to finish.
All right. Halloween music.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm thinking. So there are only like a couple songs with like a Halloween theme I can think of off the top of my head that I really like. One being Aqua's Halloween. Yes, I said Aqua. It's like the only whatever brand of music they are that I listen to. Mostly I stick with, you know, folk music and classical. But I did like Aqua back in my day. And the Halloween song was always fun to me. Lately, for like the book I'm writing right now, it's definitely kind of got a darker autumn, almost Halloween vibe to it. So I've actually been listening to the Sleepy Hollow soundtrack a lot, which has been perfect for what I've been writing. And the music's really good. And of course, I know all the words to all the Nightmare Before Christmas songs. So that's a whole thing. I can't listen to that while writing, though.
I need to find some time to make a Halloween playlist for the Halloween party. Which, by the way,
yeah.
I totally called it. And since she doesn't listen to the podcast, I don't have to worry about her smacking me for saying it. But I've been talking trash about how like I wasn't going to dress up, basically. Mm-hmm. And I was saying I was going to dress up as my friend Joe because he dresses just like I do. So I was just going to not. And every year I'm just like, I don't know. I don't want to spend money on a costume. I don't want to deal with all this. I don't have time. And then inevitably my sister's like, here's the plan. Here's what you're going to be. Like sometimes she'll just show up mm-hmm. with a costume and be like, get this on. You're the Little Mermaid. Yep. So she
that
texted
did happen
me.
1 year.
She texted me this week and she's like, I need to get on the phone with you. We got to work out Halloween costumes. So she's planning something, which yeah. works great for me, which by the way, I think she said she wanted us to be the Addams Family.
I don't she's going to try to rope me into it. I already had my costume. To.
Yeah, I know. You're just going to put me in the weird girlfriend versus sister realm.
We also told our friends, you also told our friends, the Addams, to come as the Addams Family.
Yeah, I did. I don't think they're going to, though.
Yeah, no clue.
I think Joe's dressing up as me. As he usually does.
Yeah.
All right. Creep favorite. How I want to say this. Favorite Halloween or creepy books? Go.
Okay. So I'm going to mention a couple. I've actually been doing like a spooky book read through for this last month. For those who don't know, I started like my own kind of book blog on my website where I just kind of talk a little bit about whatever book I just finished. So I've got a lot of these up on there. But my favorites recently, number one I'm going to mention is Coraline by Neil Gaiman. That book is super creepy and wonderful, and I'm about to reread it here in the next couple weeks because it's been a few years. So that one for sure. I recently finished one called The Path of Thorns. It's not even set in our world, not necessarily connected to Halloween, but it definitely kept like a creepy, spooky, dark fairy tale slash Victorian thing going on the entire time. So like imagine like a dark fairy tale mashed up with like Jane Eyre, something like that. That's what this book was like. And it was wonderful. And I loved the entire thing start to finish. And then another also not directly connected to Halloween, but had lots of like, it would definitely fit in the genre. It's not necessarily one book. It's actually a series. I don't know what the entire series is called. I think it's The Locked Tomb, but the first book is called Gideon the Ninth. If you have not read that series, go read it. It's wonderful. It's Gideon the Ninth and then Harrow the Ninth. And the newest one that came out is called Nona the Ninth. And I think there's supposed to be at least one more. And then there are like a couple short stories that have been out that's connected to it with like similar, some of the different characters starring them. But that one is like, if you find like a blurb about it, it's basically about lesbian necromancers in space. Lots of bones. There you go.
I got to give a shout out to, I haven't talked to him in years, so probably not fair to call him my friend, but an author I have met and somewhat know, Martin Powell did a book called Halloween Legion. And I thought that was a really cool book. It's kind of a short, book, but like, basically it's like these different like Halloween characters. Imagine like if the X-Men were Halloween characters.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was really cool. I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
As far as creepy, I got to give a shout. Wait, I think you read that one, didn't you? Halloween Legion?
Maybe. I remember you having me read one Halloween book. I don't remember if it was that one or not. It might have been.
That was probably it.
It's been several years. Yeah.
I would say on the creepy front, I'd have to give a shout out to this author. I recently read some of his stuff. His name's Philip Traer Duncan, and he writes creepy stuff in his Blade Mage series. And you guys should totally buy it. It's pretty solid stuff, I think.
Yep. I did think of another one while we were talking.
Go for it.
Another creepy one. It's called Horseman, and it's by Christina Henry. It's basically a retelling of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, but it's really, really good. That one was super creepy. Really fun. She does a lot of, like, she'll take kind of classic, like, fairy tales or just tales that have, you know, been published, you know, that are in the public domain, and then kind of rewrites them as like horror stories. Like she's done an Alice in Wonderland, but it's like a horror. It's a horror. Yeah. Horror. And she's done, what else? So she did that. She did a Peter Pan one that I haven't gotten to read yet. It's just called Hook. And that one, it just based on the back description, it makes it sound like Peter Pan's the villain in this one. So that'll be fun.
Immediately comes to mind for me is R.S. Belcher. I really like his stuff. The Brotherhood of the Wheel and the Nightwise books. Those are pretty creepy and really, really good. I like those a lot. Mm. I like creepy stuff, but I like it when the character can creep back at the creepers.
Yeah.
It makes me happy.
Well, since we're talking about books, this isn't creepy, but I'll throw out my own book again, Jack of Crows, because it has all sorts of fun autumn Halloween-y stuff going on. All the different...
I mean, it's got a pumpkin on the cover.
Well, he's a scarecrow. He's not a pumpkin.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well,
he's a scarecrow with a pumpkin head. Crows, foxes, wolves, witches, all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about writing.
Yeah.
You don't do as much creepy stuff as I do, but you've done some pretty creepy stuff.
Yeah.
So what is the, like, you've done really well with what you, like, whenever you're like, I'm going to do some creepy stuff, you do really well with it. So what do you think's the trick for someone to make their story come alive with creepiness?
Well, for myself, like when I'm like writing something that's creepy, also, just a weird note, when I first started off as a writer, I didn't know why I did this. I've broken it since then, but used to be when I would write short stories, they almost always tended toward horror, even if they were fantasy. And I wouldn't be able to stick to like just fantasy unless I were writing something longer. That is why, this book isn't out yet, guys, but my Kellum series, that's why that one tended to more horror elements, because it started as like a series of short stories. So, and that's where my brain would go with
that
those.
One is properly creepy.
Yep.
It's one of my favorites of yours.
Yeah, mine too. So I was going to say with that was like, I guess when I'm writing, so on the one hand, just writing short stories, my brain starts to like add in creepy stuff. But if I'm trying to be creepy, I guess I consider like the things that scare me and then try to tap into like sensory things. So, I don't know, you can do that in different ways, but, yeah, unexpected things as well, where it's like something that should be normal and suddenly like just things are off even by like just a little bit, and then kind of escalating that until you've got like really creepy stuff. I don't know if that made sense.
It do. And I think the sensory piece is vital. I think that's a great shout out. Because that builds into it. And you really want to, I think, pull somebody in when you're trying to creep them out. And I think you start from, well, I guess you can start from two places, right? You can start from this concept creeps me out, but also I've done them from the concept of like, this doesn't creep me out. And but I know people are creeped out by it. So how can I, you know, like almost experience that by trying to create it, if that makes sense.
Right.
I think my big number one tip would be like basically the same thing I do for writing battle scenes, right? Is I think a lot of people kind of almost hold, like they almost limit themselves a little bit. They almost hold back in their creativity by like, you know, batting away ideas that seem too outlandish maybe. And I dive straight in head first. I'm like, the more outlandish it is, okay, fine. How can I make it work now? Right. So, you know, people always, I've gotten a lot of messages over the years and things from, the Moonshine Wizard, from the clowns, right?
Yep.
So like, it doesn't surprise me now if somebody randomly sends me a message about the clowns and I don't know why I decided to do it, but basically once I was there, I'm like, I'm going to make clowns be their own species. They're going to be their own supernatural entity. And I had this, I was building up towards them, and I just had this scene where basically the main character's walking down the street and he sees some guy watching him, starts following him. And up ahead, he sees another guy who's identical. And then another guy who's identical beyond that. And so he's like, I'm going to slip down this alley and get ready to fight. But once he gets in there, it's like everything turns into pitch blackness and, he can't sense magic and stuff. And he's like, he's a wizard. So he's like, what, you know, I don't know what's going on. And that turns into a whole thing. I don't want to give too many spoilers in case people haven't read it, but
yeah,
I just kind of was following this wild line of outlandish ideas where he ends up in a fun house and then he comes out into this room and here are the clowns, and I just went again outlandish to the next level. And what are the clowns doing and how do I make them as terrifying as possible, right? And so it was like, there's a clown who is like trying to get a dead dog to do a trick, and then like he's like holding out a human finger or something as a treat, and the dead dog hops up. And there's another like on a tricycle, and he's got two severed human arms he's using to steer the tricycle. And then like the clown leader is like a little tiny boy clown sitting up on a big throne or something.
Yep.
And it's it was just following the path of like how crazy and wild and outlandish are these concepts and can I make them work, right? And every once in a while I'll find an outlandish concept I can't make work, but generally I'll find a way to make it fit, you know, and not seem outlandish.
Yeah. Something you said reminded me of another book. It is not a creepy book, but it has one of the creepiest scenes that we've both talked about, and that is A Wrinkle in Time. There is a scene.
Oh yeah, that still creeps me out.
Yeah, like they're the main character. If you haven't read it, the main characters are on this other planet, and it's like this like suburbia, and like all these kids come out at the same time, and they're bouncing a ball, and every single one is in sync, and like these dads come out, and they all get in their cars, and all of that is in sync, and then like one little kid's like out of sync, and then it's like, oh crap, what's gonna happen now? And like he gets taken away. Yeah, that whole thing.
Yeah, I honestly think that scene in that book is the reason why I get creeped out in suburban neighborhoods where all the houses look alike.
Yes.
I could never live in one. Like, I know that's like, I guess the American dream, and that's what most people want to do, is live in a nice neighborhood with a house that matches their neighbors. Nope. No, thank you. Pass. Yeah. They're coming to take me away because I bounced my ball wrong.
And that's probably a really good... I was going to say that's probably a really good example of a book where it's like you're not – she wasn't writing a creepy book. It's fantasy, but it just introduced this super creepy element that for some people that wouldn't be that creepy with like, okay, it's just a suburban neighborhood, whatever. Like the stuff's kind of weird that they're all in sync, but whatever. But like for both of us, it's like, what the heck?
I mean, honestly, that's a weird thing to me anyways, because like you see like the movies they've done and stuff and they're like, as you said, it like more fantasy, right? And they're more like – they're like kid friendly, right? And they're vibrant and bright and whatever. But to me as a kid, when I read those books, I thought, especially the first one, I thought, this is creepy. This is just a creepy book. And I love it. I love it. And in my head, everything I think was much darker than maybe how other people read it. I don't know. All right. What else do you want to talk about Halloween? What else do you want to talk about from a writing standpoint? All right, fine. Let's do the news. Spooky news coming right up. Spooky. All right. For our news, the first one is sort of sad, but also pretty awesome, I thought. So it's sad in that the legendary comic artist Keith Giffen passed away recently, and he was known for writing for Marvel and DC. He was especially noted for the character of Rocket Raccoon from the Guardians of the Galaxy. But what is wild is apparently he tweeted his own death. I guess it's suspected that he like pre-wrote this tweet and had somebody ready to send it on his behalf. But what he tweeted was, "I told them I was sick, ... Anything not to go to New York Comic Con. Thanks. Keith Giffen, 1952 to 2023. Bah-ha-ha, ha-ha-ha-ha." Which is pretty amazing. It reminded me of the Terry Pratchett thing, right? Where Terry Pratchett left in his will to have them run over his hard drives with a steamroller to destroy any of his unfinished works. What a baller way to go. That's how I want to go. Mm-hmm. Let's write a death tweet for you to send out on my behalf. You're not keen on this idea?
Not so much on yours. I mean, I guess we could if you want, but
I mean, let's be real. Ahead of time. I'm definitely going to die before you.
Why do you think that?
I'm an idiot. I'm going to walk off of something. I'm going to walk into something. Weird stuff happens to me all the time. I'll get attacked by a wild boar. Of course, a goat tried to ram you yesterday, so.
That is true.
All right. What's our next one?
Okay, next thing. It looks like ebook revenues are down. So in August, ebook sales went down 3.7%. Audiobooks remain up. It does look like hardbacks went up and paperbacks also went up as far as the sales goes. So that's good. I also noticed that says August and we're in October. So is this...
Yeah, they're just, usually a couple months behind. They're just late to report it. Gotcha. Yeah, they're usually a couple of months. I've noticed as a trend in the industry, they're usually about 2 months behind on reporting sales figures.
Yeah. I guess that makes sense. But I'm glad to see paperbacks and hardbacks are up a bit.
Yeah, that's always good. And our next bit of very spooky, shocking news. This one's going to come as a real hit. You guys are not prepared for this. Apparently, some authors bribe people for reviews.
What?
All right, I know this might not be newsworthy, but group in the UK just did an investigation that they're claiming that 1 out of 10 reviews came directly from Dirty Tactics. They cited that people were offered gift cards, refunds, or free stuff for leaving 5-star reviews. Now, this isn't just for books, I think. I think it was for all sorts of products, which also might not come as shocking news. But apparently the Federal Trade Commission is proposing new rules to thump people for getting fake reviews, basically. And they're talking about, like, they could hit people with fines for up to $50,000 and even restitution on top of that. So I guess if you're engaging in questionable behavior, maybe don't do that.
Probably a good thing to live by.
I didn't know that was the trick to getting reviews, though. That's why I don't have enough. I was waiting for people who read my book to go and give me reviews.
Yeah, I have done so for the latest book. I did have a group of people, kind of like early reviewers, where it's like they got to read the book ahead of time and leave a review. But it's like I didn't offer them anything other than getting to read the book before everybody else.
Yeah, I don't think like ARC readers and beta readers are in question. I think it's more about,
right,
you know, specifically people who pay people off or offer them free, right, things, that sort of thing.
But that's what I was getting at, was like you can find those people. I mean, I guess depending on where you live or how many friends you have, maybe they're a little harder to come by, and so you're having to resort to these dirty things. You can also just hire people on there are all sorts of resources you can find these days where you can get legitimate reviewers, and like some might charge, others might not. It just depends on where you're looking, but like you can get honest reviews in an honest manner if you are willing to do so.
Yeah. I just need to call out here for a moment. You know, like, you know how there's always weird ads on my web pages when we're doing the news?
Yeah.
Do you see that shirt it's trying to sell me at the bottom right? Like, I know I just had a birthday. I can
see it a little bit.
It's a shirt. They're trying to sell me a shirt that says, "Don't piss off old people." I'm not that old yet. Like, come on. Like, why is it advertising me an old people shirt? Oh, maybe I am old. Maybe I didn't realize it. Am I a grandpa?
All right, next news story. Apparently, pirating is a big thing down in the Australia area. So recent reports showed that 191,000 books by, is it just all Australian authors? Yes, yeah, so it looks like. So Australian authors, 191,000 of their books have been pirated, according to an article by Good E-Reader.
Yeah, I like that their use of the word exploited. 191,000 books have been exploited. I was like, what do you mean by exploit? Does exploited mean 191,000 books have possibly been pirated? Or are you telling me that 191,000 books have been pirated?
I'm wondering if exploited means like something else is being done with the books. Like, so to me, when it's pirated, like I imagine someone obtaining the book by illegal means to read it, but exploited also sounds like there's more going on than that. Like either they're making money off of this or they're using it like, you know, is it like an AI type thing where they're using it for nefarious purposes or something along those lines?
It doesn't actually specify either. Like, is this 190? So it doesn't. Well, for one, your question earlier is it didn't specify if all of the 191,000 were just in Australia. And it also doesn't specify whether that's 191,000 titles or individual copies of ebooks.
Yeah, it just said 191,000 books. So that might be multiple copies of the same book. I'm not really sure.
Unclear. Moving on. It's spooky. It's a spooky mystery. We'll never know the answer to. All right. Got to do Chris's AI voice, but I got to make it spooky.
Do it.
I don't know how to make it spooky. I'll make ghost sounds or something.
In our sound like Vincent continued Price. Coverage of our robot overlords. Woo!
How's that? Was that spooky?
Yeah, I was trying to tell you to try to sound like Vincent Price, but that might have been asking too much.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, so he's the old guy who did the voice at the end of Thriller. And I believe he was also in Edward Scissorhands. He was Edward's creator person.
I can't do that voice. Are you kidding me?
You could try.
No. I'm just going to go with my... It's a ghost sound. That's what ghosts sound like. Right. So there's an AI startup called Anybook, and they're saying they want to be the Netflix or Spotify of publishing. And so what they're doing, if I'm understanding this correctly, which I could possibly not be, but it sounds like what they're doing is they're looking for organizations, companies, whatever, who want to have like a library for their teams or whatever. And so they'll bring these little kiosk libraries where people can like come check out books. But then like they want feedback from people who are borrowing the books, like what they like, what they don't like. And then they have an AI over the top that is sort of tracking that so that they can automatically restock the library kiosk with books that people will want. So I guess it's kind of a cool idea. It's interesting.
I'd almost rather just like, if I'm going to go that route, I'll just go to a library and speak with a real librarian who can recommend awesome books that are similar to other awesome books.
Yeah. Maybe they should just offer to get some kind of a deal with, like Audible to actually get me some recommendations I want, because Amazon has not figured that out yet.
Yeah. That did remind me of an app I don't use nearly enough that I found several months back, maybe even a year back. It's called Likewise, but it's supposed to be like for books, movies. I don't know if it includes games or not, but basically the idea is you enter like books or movies that you've enjoyed, and it's supposed to recommend similar ones that you may also enjoy. Something along those lines. Yeah.
That would be more useful to me, right? Because I can't imagine where, you know, I go to day job that they will ever have a kiosk for me to borrow library books, but I could definitely use something that was like, oh, you like this, this, and this, then you probably actually would like this. Because,
right.
Like I said, like Amazon hasn't figured it out. None of the others really have. They don't really send me, very rarely does something pop up that I'm like, yeah, that actually looks like exactly what I want to read next. So that's cool.
Yeah, maybe give it a try. I should probably use it more than I do. Part of the problem is I have so many unread books that I'm just like, I don't care. I'll just go through what I've got and update my wish list as needed. Eventually, maybe, if I'm lucky, I'll catch up on the to-be-read list, and then maybe I'll use that more.
Fair enough. All right. That's it for the news section. It's becoming a ghost. spooky.
All right. right, for our tools segment this time, I suggested we talk about notebooks. I know a lot of spooky you authors notebooks. Out there. Yes. Well, notebooks in general. I know a lot of authors have. You shush. I know a lot of authors have probably mostly transitioned to writing on computers these days, which I totally get. It's way faster and easier once you've, you know, because once you've written on a computer, like, that's it. Like, you just save your work and you're done. You're ready to move on. But I did want to talk a bit about notebooks and writing by hand in general, because I used to do that exclusively. I would write everything by hand first, type up what I had written at some later point, and then work on the book, you know, as a digital document from then on. But I guess I like that writing in a notebook sort of puts me in a different headspace while I'm writing. Like, there's something about staring at a screen when I'm writing that's different than, like, working in a notebook with a pen in my hand and writing everything out by hand. Like, it's easier to linger in a scene for a bit. I guess, like, for just speaking for me personally, I may not dwell on things quite as much if I'm typing a first draft, if that makes sense. So notebooks in general, I guess, so that was kind of like the art of writing in a notebook, but talking about the notebooks themselves, I've used several different types over the years. My favorite lately has actually become the composition notebooks, the college ruled. I love those, especially since we got these really fancy notebook covers at the Ren Faire a couple years back. So I can just
shout out Boar's Head Leather.
Pop one in there. Yeah, it's amazing. But I also really like just any notebook that's got like a really cool cover that kind of like the theme might match what I'm working on. That always gets me in the right writing mood. I have realized I don't like spiral notebooks anymore, at least not for writing novels. Like, if it's just like random notes to remind myself of something, that's fine. But for writing, you know, creatively, I can't do spirals anymore. I think that that's done.
For years, I've always hauled a notebook with me pretty much everywhere I go.
Mm.
And usually I usually carry two. And one's like an actual writing notebook and one's kind of a scratch notebook where I like make myself notes and stuff about whatever I'm thinking about or I need to like to do or I'm trying to solve a problem or whatever. What I figured out, like, I don't mind writing in a spiral notebook. In fact, I wrote in lots of them. I do like College Rule because I write big. And if I write big, I waste less page, like, with smaller lines. Basically, I'll write to the line size. So I prefer College Rule. But what I found toting around spiral notebooks for a long time, because I just buy the cheapo, like, $1 spiral notebooks. Also, by the way, if you're a writer and you do write by hand and you like spiral notebooks or composition notebooks, here's a little Creatives on Fire hack for you. Go to the Walmart during back to school and they sell spiral notebooks for like 30 cents a pop or something. And they'll sell composition notebooks for like 50 cents or something like that. And I'll usually every other year or something go buy like two boxes of each. Because what I do now is I'll keep a spiral notebook. I've literally got one sitting in front of me right now that I just write notes on for whatever in life I need paper and pen or whatever I'm thinking out, whatever. But the problem I had hauling around the spiral notebook all the time was they would get tore up. The little metal things would get stripped out of my backpack or whatever. And just by chance at the Ren Faire one year, I bought a really cool leather bound. It's like a notebook holder. Like it looks like a journal, but when you open it, you can just put a composition notebook inside of it. So I started hauling that around with me and I realized my notebooks weren't getting torn up where I was having to throw them away early. The leather was protecting them. So I've bought, as JH alluded to, several of the notebook cover things from Boar's Head Leather. They make really cool ones. My favorite one is I got like a really nice green one that they like put a lady playing a violin on the cover, and it's really cool. Mm-hmm. Got like a Serenity one, something with like a knight on it. I don't know. I've got way more than I are practical for what I need. But what I love about them is when I've finished out the composition notebook, I can just pull it out and put another one in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really nice. I like being able to do that as well. I typically have only used mine for composition notebooks. I haven't tried any others in there. I also have a whole like crate full of notebooks that I'm trying to work my way through. So a lot of them are all different shapes and sizes and don't necessarily fit in those leather cases. So it just depends on what I'm working on, what notebook I decide to use for handwriting. I also keep it's a small notebook specifically for story ideas. It's like my story scratch pad, if you will. So if I'm out and about, I get a new story idea, I will put it in that notebook. So it is the keeper of all story germs, I guess you could say, of future novels.
I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't the ghost dance at the party?
I don't know.
He had no body to dance with.
Nice.
Where does a ghost go on vacation?
Where?
Malibu.
Okay.
What is in a ghost's nose?
No clue.
Boogers.
Gross.
Why did the policeman ticket the ghost on Halloween?
Why?
It didn't have a haunting license.
Okay.
What's a ghost's favorite play?
Don't know.
Romeo and Juliet.
My brain said Macbeth, and I was like, I don't know how I can make a pun out of that.
Why do ghosts make the best cheerleaders?
Why?
They have a lot of spirit. How do you know if a mummy is sick?
How?
He can't stop coughing. Why are vampires easily fooled?
Why?
They're suckers. How can you tell when a vampire has been in a bakery?
How?
It's not even, this one's dumb. We're skipping that. I don't like it.
Okay.
I don't like that one. What do you get when you cross a vampire and a snowman?
What?
Frostbite. What's a vampire's favorite ice cream flavor?
What?
Vanilla. Vanilla.
Okay.
Why do vampires not want to become investment bankers?
Why?
They hate stakeholders. All right, one more. What do you call a cleaning skeleton?
What?
The Grim Sweeper.
Okay.
All right, one more. I lied.
Oh, geez.
Why do skeletons have low self-esteem?
Why?
They have nobody to love. All right, I'm done. Anything else about notebooks?
I guess just to say I got a really cool new one just this past weekend, and I already started a new novel in it that I shouldn't be writing because I should be working on the other book I mentioned, but I couldn't help it, and yeah, that's what we're doing there. But I'm only letting myself work on it after I've gotten my other work done for the day.
Fair enough. I also got a cool notebook. Mine's cooler than yours. The end. Thank you.
Mine's got purple mushrooms on it. There, I said it.
Sneaky. Look what you did. That was sneaky. What do vegetarian zombies eat?
What?
Grains. these are terrible.
Create us on fire?
There was a good one I had pulled up. And then it moved. I'm going to do Creatives on Fire, but there was a really good one I liked, and it just disappeared on me. And now I want to read it to you. But I can't find it. Disappeared on me. Ah, there it is. Who won the Skeleton Beauty Contest?
Mm.
Nobody. Butt-up-ching. All right, I'm done. Let's talk about something real spooky.
About time.
For creatives. Oh, you calm it down. I did that because poor Christopher couldn't be here with us today.
I actually like puns, but you did drag it on a bit.
How dare you? I was just trying to spice up this Halloween episode. I'm the one over here trying to make it all spooky. Creatives on Fire, let's talk about something that normally would be boring to me, but it's a great way to save and grow some money without tax penalties. Let's talk about, because it's that time of year where everybody's doing their annual enrollment for benefits, the HSA. So I ignored the HSA. Well, for a long time, it wasn't an option for me. And when it finally did become one, I was like, well, I don't know why I'd want that. I don't know why I'd want to put away more money and not have that money for me. But it's actually really cool. So HSA stands for Health Savings Account. I think I've probably covered them at some point before. And I won't go into great details. I would only say that if you have annual enrollment and it's an option, it's at least worth looking at and seeing how it works, particularly in whatever plan thing you're on or if it's feasible. Because what you can do is, and I think the limit for next year is like $4,100, something like that. Basically, you can allot a certain amount of money from like your check to go to the HSA. And once it hits a certain amount, and that's pre-tax, so it's just like your traditional 401k, they take the money out before they hit your taxes, right? So you can allot a certain amount to go in. At least that's how all the ones I've seen work. And so each check, a certain amount of money goes into that account. They'll have some kind of threshold in there, like you have to keep $1,000 in it or something like that. But when you get over that amount, any amount over that gets invested. And so, you know, like I have one from a previous employer that I don't even know what it's doing. I don't even know how to log into it at this point, but put a bunch of money in there and it's just invested in broad-based index funds and just doing its thing and growing. And basically the idea is that when you have, so the concept would be that if you have a medical bill or something, right, you can go draw money out of that HSA tax-free to reimburse yourself for the medical expense, right? But you don't have to use it that way. You don't have to use it that way right now. So for me, I've stuffed money into mine in the past where I just said, I'm not going to use this for a long time and let it grow and grow and grow. And then, you know, later in life as medical things come up, then I'll have way more money to cover them. That's sort of my game plan. There's some real wonky stuff you can do, some real spooky stuff you can do with like different ways to draw down the money later. I'm not going to get into all of that. I'm just more of it's worth looking into. There's some neat tricks you can do with an HSA. I just think I'm going to call out the basics of it so that you understand if it's a tool and you've never looked at it before and you always just take the normal health insurance plan, it's at least worth considering looking at and seeing if it, you know, the coverage will be okay for your existence, because it is a good way to every year stash away some more money that you don't have to pay taxes on right now, but that could benefit you in the future. The one call out, I think we covered it on the Authors on Fire. So we talked about it a little bit more in more depth on episode 7, Authors on Fire. And I think Chris made a really good call out there. Is the one thing is to make sure it's actually an HSA, a health savings plan, before you sign up for it. Because there are ones that are like, you know, some kind of other saver plan or whatever, where you take out money from your check and you put it in, but at the end of the year you lose it. And that's not what we're talking about. I'm talking about an actual health savings account where the money you put in is always yours and you don't lose it, and it allows you to invest it and stuff. So that is your spooky Creatives on Fire tip of the week. JH and I guess for the Creatives Fire side of the writing business specifically, we will be attending the World Fantasy Convention next week. And I don't know what that episode's going to look like. I have some fun ideas. Technically, our recording day, we will be at the convention. So I'm not sure if the episode will look anything like a normal episode or not, but we're definitely going to try to do some fun stuff while we're there and get it recorded.
Yeah.
If we don't forget to take our microphones. All right, JH, final spooky thoughts?
Spooky thoughts?
Yeah. Just tell the people where to find you, is what I'm saying.
Jesus. Why are you going to make it so difficult?
Because it's a Halloween episode. I'm trying to have fun. Will you be mean to me? Now I feel dumb.
I'm not. No. I'm on all the social media places. You can also find me at jhfleming.net. Got new book and album out, which you can find also in all the places. Kobo, Amazon, Barnes & Noble album is on all the music sites. If you want a physical copy, you can get that at Bandcamp. The band is called Wildwood Minstrels. The album is called Once Upon a Time. You can also find a link to that on my website.
All right. And I am Philip Dreher Duncan, and I don't have anything new to promote, so just go buy my old stuff. And if you're like, I already bought your old stuff, well, do you know what makes great Christmas presents? Blade Mage books and JH music albums and JH books. They're the best Christmas presents you could ever get somebody. And Christmas is right around the corner, so you might want to start loading up and buying our stuff. And you can find all of it on the Zaun. Let's be real. You all shop at the Zaun. Just go look at the Zaun. You can get our stuff. All right. That's our spooky Halloween episode. I hope you are properly terrified and haunted by how awesome we are. Bye.